Warning. The following presentation is for mature audiences only. It is not intended for children, the oversensitive, or self-righteous gas bags with sticks up their butts.
This project is extremely dangerous.
It's because I blew it out of the goddamn airlock.
You're listening to the Guardians of the Geekery podcast, featuring Matt Starnslord, Carol the Cat, the Giddy Geeker, and Tiffany the Technician.
People assume that time is a strict progression of cause to effect, but actually, from a non-linear, non-subjective viewpoint, it's more like a big ball of wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey stuff.
And now, damn right they shot first, the hosts of Guardians of the Geekery.
That was cool.
I know. We could never do that again if we tried.
Guess what this episode is.
It's book week.
Oh, I was going to say, we read a monster
book.
Or something?
We read a book.
I was like, that is a very big book and not the book we
this
read.
This is the mammoth book of Frankenstein. I'm a Frankenstein fiend, so a huge collection of short stories.
But you're a Francophile? Oh, wait, that's
can't be. That can't be just Frankenstein, because Mary Shelley didn't write quite that much prose.
It's other people create their own Frankenstein stories.
Frankenstein fan fiction.
That's right.
They didn't call it back then. It's Frankenship.
Frankenstein after dark. Oh, no.
But that's not what we read, no.
No, I did not read that. No.
What did we read, Carol?
We read The Disaster Artist by Greg Sestero.
Woo-hoo. So, Tiffles, you read it, right?
I did.
Did you read it before or after you watched The Room?
I have not watched The Room. So I am, I think, the only person here that has not seen The Room or seen the Disaster Artist movie. Yes. And my first remark I want to make is that I find Greg Sestero very attractive, based on the pictures of him
younger. He is actually
younger.
We've seen him in person.
Yeah.
He is
still very attractive. Yeah.
You know, although, that's like my angle for everything.
He's not Henry Cavill. He's more blonde.
Hell no. No. But I enjoyed.
He's a little Zach Morrissey, which I hear that you're into.
Zach Morris was everything for a time. I really enjoyed the book. It was like a very, very quick read, I felt, like, even with the jumping around. But so I was a little familiar with the story surrounding it because. You know, obviously people talk about The
You're
Room
friends
all the time.
With us.
I'm friends with you guys. And I listened to a very good interview with James Franco and Tommy Wiseau on Howard Stern, and everybody knows I'm a big Howard Stern fan. So
oh, hi Howard. How are you today?
Yeah. Hi Howard.
The only person who has more fucked up hair than Howard Stern is Tommy Wiseau.
He voted best hair actually every year, Matt. Okay.
Who votes? Just Tommy?
He voted.
you're talking Howard.
Howard. Yeah. She's very territorial over Howard.
So I really enjoyed the book. I enjoyed the aspect of this person like pursuing a passion of theirs.
Yeah, yeah.
And even though it turned out to be this colossally fucked up sort of product, I guess, based on me not seeing it. But I enjoy people following their passions. The one thing I would take away from this, though, is I wouldn't say I have less of a desire, but I would say I don't have any more desire to see The Room than I did prior. I do have more of a desire to see the movie, The Disaster Artist,
yeah.
But I actually feel like The Room might actually annoy me a little bit because I like things very...
I do think actually The Room would annoy you.
Yeah.
It would annoy you in the first 10 minutes because half of that 10 minutes is a really bad sex scene.
Let's back up the track.
Okay.
The first 10 minutes is actually Tommy Wiseau's logos because he couldn't decide
true,
which one he
so
wanted.
He just put them all on there.
And he did like a separate black screen for each of his titles.
Yeah.
So instead of saying written, directed, produced, and engineered and imagined by Tommy Wiseau, it's like directed by,
produced.
Engineered by, produced by, written by. So
I want to hang out with him, like Tommy Wiseau.
Yeah, I'll hang out with Greg Sestero because he seems like a cool guy. Tommy just seems like a creepy uncle.
Oh, he would have totally annoyed me, but like I just love his accent. I love just completely how oblivious he is to social norms.
You've got to see The Room then, because you would oh, laugh. Okay. It's so horrible, but you would laugh because, yeah, it's him, the accent, the whole time, because that's all he can do.
Adopt with this world.
But it's a typical New Orleans accent when you really think about it, right?
For sure.
They all talk like that in the bayou.
French Creole.
So
the disaster artist does tell the story of Greg Sestero meeting Tommy Wiseau at an acting class. And Greg had talked about this, saying that he befriended Tommy, not because he was a good actor, but because he just felt this guy was so passionate about acting. Because
he didn't care.
He didn't care.
And it's very obvious in the way that Greg writes about himself that he is very self-conscious.
Yes.
And so you can understand why he would be attracted to somebody who has such abandon and kind of dysmorphia or dysphoria about himself, not in appearance, but in about perception.
Yeah. But and how they move to LA and decide to make a movie, or Tommy actually decides to make the movie because he funds it and writes it, and how this movie became such a cult classic disaster of a film.
Well, and so a couple of things. This book is written not chronologically. It's written kind of time-lapsey.
Yeah.
So one chapter, but fortunately it's chapter by chapter. So one chapter may be all about the filming of the room. And then the next one is about how Greg and Tommy first met. And then another one might be about the next stage in filming. So they're interwoven between each other. So you do, it is a quick read. It's only 267 pages, but it is, you kind of jump in and out. So for me, it took me a little longer to read this than like the Quincy Harker novel because
it did jump around.
Because it did jump around. So,
this was actually easier for me to read. I read it really quickly.
I agree with you.
It was really light, and I think they did a great job adapting this into a movie as well. Yeah. Having seen The Disaster Artist, I mean, I was just like, wow, they really made it better, I think, than the
they did.
I think they did.
For me, the movie kind of lightened Tommy's character a little bit. In the book, he comes across as a lot more selfish and a lot more, particularly toward cast and crew of the movie, a bit more just fucking mean.
Yeah.
But you know, it was his vision and he needed to make the movie and the way he wants, and so, you know, in his mind he was being the director and he didn't really care. So, but and Sestero actually attempts to figure out where the money for this movie came from.
Yeah.
Because this film cost $6 million.
And even though that's chump change in LA,
yeah,
that's a lot of freaking money.
Considering
a lot of blue jeans.
Yeah. Considering the movie The Room takes place, you know, 75% of it takes place in the room in one set. It was really actually written initially as a play. Which was
kind of, not having seen it, you can kind of see that based on the way they were describing it. Like, and but I mean, they wasted so much time with like breaking down sets and then rebuilding them the next day.
Yeah.
So I mean, that's a lot
and
of
creating
time waste.
A green screen for something that they could have just gone on the roof and filmed, or in the alley and filmed.
Using two cameras.
And buying them, just actually buying them.
The thing that I think was so interesting was that in the movie, because we've watched The Room many times, and then we've seen the riff tracks of the movie, and then we saw The Disaster Artist, then I read the book. So you had read the book before.
I had read the book first. Yeah, I'd seen The Room.
Right, but you had read the book mm-hmm. before you saw The Disaster Artist.
Yeah.
For me, I think there were times in the book where I was like, oh, that's not the way they did it in the movie. And so that kind of threw me out a little bit. So, and so there were things like how he met Amber. And so what I don't know is that the way he met Amber, is that really the way he met Amber? Or was that just his like folding in of the story about the two girls that came and sat with them, you know, that kind of thing. So I wonder how much of it was James Franco saying, so what was it really like doing that? So.
Oh, I think a lot of time. I think Franco took some liberties as well. Just
well, obviously, you didn't want to have to like add all these extra characters, just like you do in Harry Potter or anything else. You kind of merge lines with people. But I thought it was a really good book. I didn't think it was a quick read for me, but I think it was because so Carol and I had the opportunity to go up to Geeksboro Cafe, when Greg Sestero's new movie, which was one that not Tommy Wiseau wrote, but that Greg wrote, which was called
Best Friends. Friends is in parentheses because they're kind of friends. They're kind of fiends. I've been calling it Best Friends.
Right. And in the book, it actually talks about some of the stuff that is then also in Best Friends.
Yeah.
So, but Greg Sestero was actually on site for the viewing. And Carol and I got there right as it, like 10 minutes late or something like that. So it was right as it was starting. And he was actually standing beside us as we were watching part of it. And then he came back down early because they had two floors where they were dual screening it. Because there were so many people there to see it. And so he came back down. And then we did stand in line. We didn't really get to talk to him. By the time we got to him, he'd already been...
They were pushing people through at that point because they had another screening after.
Yeah, so people were coming in for the screening and they were trying to push people out. So he seemed a little more tired, which you didn't know. I mean, it was a 10 o'clock at night screening or something. So it's like,
and he had a whole nother one to do. So I'm sure he was on a plane and then doing this. And what I will say is after he screened, he actually asked the opinions of the audience.
Like, he really wanted to know.
He actually was taking notes because the film was still in production and it is actually two films. They're doing a secondary part
because they realized they had so much. Yeah. So.
But he was actually asking opinions. So what do you think of this? What do you think of this? And I think he actually was asking that because he wanted to know, not because he just had to do something to fill the time.
Yeah, no, he was watching us. And which, when you read the book and about the fact that he's so self-critical and I know I shouldn't have done this. I knew right then I shouldn't have gone with him. But I was like, well, if I don't go, then like he always second guesses himself. And you see that, like, I kept finding myself reflecting back to that night in Geeksboro and saying, yep, that is, like, he's being very honest here about how he was, because that's how he was. So,
and I do think in this book, he does, because he is friends with Tommy Wiseau and they're still friends. I mean, they still work together. It wasn't like they did this film and then they don't talk anymore or whatever. They still talk. They still work together. They're obviously still friends. I think he does try and explain Tommy's behavior a bit too much. Just because
it's that toxic friendship, you know? It's like, well, if I don't be his friend, who else is going to be his friend?
And he just, he does tend to make excuses for him quite a bit. Particularly in like his treatment of, Juliet, I can't remember her last name, the woman who played Lisa.
Yeah.
In my opinion, Tommy treated like she was actually Lisa and not an actress playing her.
Right.
But in Tommy's mind, that probably got screwed up. And he's probably just thinking, well, that's Lisa. She looks beautiful today.
Yeah. No, I was really intrigued by the book and I enjoy it. I'm glad that we read it.
I like the pictures too. I thought that's cool.
Yeah, and I like the quotes at the beginning of the chapters because as you go into the book, the deeper you go into the book, the more relevant you realize the quotes are. So
yes, yeah.
Because there's a part of you, I think, after seeing The Room, even though Greg didn't write it, he acted in it. And so you think, oh, well, maybe he's doing all this stuff to prove that he's literate and academic and
smart.
All this kind of stuff. But then you realize, no, this is actually him trying to explain to you a little bit of who he is.
And
even though I felt like sometimes he was trying to like prove, hey, I really did do this and I really did do that. And here's some name dropping and stuff like that. You really started to see there's a certain amount of honesty in there because he is so self-defacing.
Yeah. And I've heard interviews with him where, because people say, do you regret starring in the film? And he's like, I can't regret starring in the film. I've traveled around the world because of this terrible film. Yes, it's a terrible film, but it made its money back now, and it's made both of these men quite wealthy.
So one burning question that I had at the beginning or halfway through, Have you seen Retro Puppet Master?
I have, actually. Riff Tracks did a riff of Retro Puppet Master.
Of course you have.
Because now I kind of want to go see it.
I have it on Riff Tracks.
Go to Vizart Video and pick it up probably. Yeah.
I'm pretty sure they probably have it unriffed. Like I said, I have the Riff Tracks version of it. I haven't seen it unriffed because I'm not a huge Puppet Master fan. But it is... He is dubbed through the entire film.
Mm.
Because I think he sounded a bit too California. And it's this takes place in Europe. But
oh my God.
I'm going to say right now, he's at that point, he was not a very good actor. I don't think he was that great an actor in The Room either. And I don't, you know, that a lot of that is, you know, laid at the feet of the director and the script.
Well, and he talks about how he phoned a lot of it in because he was trying to be a line producer at the same time. And being a line producer meant trying to be the buffer between Tommy and everybody else.
Yeah. So
that's a full-time gig,
But I mean, he's as good as he probably can be in Retro Puppet Master as far as what the movie is, which is like the fifth movie in the Puppet Master series.
Oof.
But yes, I have seen it.
I was so curious about it. So.
Well, I'll have to do a screening because it's on my Riff Tracks account.
Yeah, I just was like, if anybody in this group has seen it, Carol will be the one who's seen it. So
I'm glad to know.
Yeah, and we know you love those Puppet Master
I like
movies.
The way Joey just rolled her eyes so hard at me, by the way.
You may have heard that on the audio portion of this podcast as I rolled my eyes back into my head. Yeah, no Henry Cavill in there. You didn't know who Greg Sestero was back then, and you're not into puppets, so nope.
Good points.
Nope. So I'm glad we read it. I feel like I do have a better understanding about it.
I still want to know where his money came from, because I don't think it's all from selling bootleg jeans.
You'll never
here.
Know. Because they were trying to ask him on Howard Stern, like even James Franco was like, Tommy, really? We're really going to say this was jeans? I mean, really? Really? And he's like, yeah, what do you mean, James? You know.
Yeah, the book talks about his early commercials and stuff for his store when he actually had a store. And you, for a while there, you could actually see them on YouTube. You could see the old commercials. But he has gone through and pulled anything that has him in it and basically slapped it with the Tommy Wiseau logo, so you see little tiny snips, but for the rest of it you have to actually go to his website and like purchase shit.
Gee. Well, I thought it was interesting in the book where they went and there's like all those, that row of like that fashion district, like those buildings, and it was like Greg was like, does he own these? Because people were like talking about paying them rent, so it's like he owned property in San Francisco, one of the most expensive places. And it's like, who knows? I mean, it's like, where did all that? Yeah. It's like, who knows where the initial seed came from that he built on? But it was just like crazy ass shit like that, where you're like, what?
And I don't think we'll ever really know.
No.
It's one of those mysteries. It'll probably be something simple like his Aunt Catherine felt pity on him and gave him one of those. And he just ended up stumbling into, you know, it being a gentrified area or something. But
yeah.
Who knows? But, you know, I think, do we really want to know?
No. Really? Yeah. Just leave the mystery. Leave the mystery
I'm
that
sure
is Tommy Wiseau.
You'll find out.
You'll find, like, all these rich old ladies buried in his backyard.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, like, how much of Best Friends really is? Because, you know, some of the scenes.
Because he plays a mortician.
Yeah, and he plays around with faces. Yeah. So.
I think it's good in this day and age, Joe, that, like, where you know everything about every fucking person. And, I mean, it's like, it's good to not know stuff. It's like, I like that actually now, because it's like, I'm tired of knowing what everybody had for lunch, and I don't care. It's just, you need some mystery in the world, damn it.
Leave the mystery behind.
That's right.
So I do recommend the book. I think it's actually it's a really good read.
What would you give it as a grade?
I'd give it an A.
Okay.
This, you know, for what it is, it's not highbrow literature. No. I'd give it an A.
Yeah, I would say like an A minus. But I, because it's like, because I've not seen the movies, I guess, I'm a little bit removed from it, but I really genuinely felt like when reading it, you're like, who, like, it just seems like fiction. Almost. And it was, so in that way, it was like really enjoyable. And then just, like I said, I enjoyed like even just reading Tommy talking. So,
if yeah, you did, I would. Yeah, if you listen to the audiobook, Greg actually does the Tommy Wiseau accent for all of Tommy's lines.
Oh my gosh.
Really?
Yeah.
Now I have to listen to the audiobook.
Yep.
Starnslord, your grade?
I give it a B+. I mean, it was definitely like a popcorn book, but it was well done, I thought.
Yeah, see, and my.
Like the ghostwriter, whoever that he partnered with him, I think.
It just wasn't popcorn for me. I felt like it was a much harder read for me. I found myself spending more time thinking about it. So I give it a B+, but it wasn't a quick read for me. And usually things are very quick read for me. But I think it was because I was thinking about it from a psychological standpoint a lot more. So for that, it was enjoyable, but it wasn't a quick read for me. As you know, it took me 3 nights to read it, where like Quincy Harker, it took me a night. So, and double the pages. So there you go. So what else have we read lately? As we all look at Carol.
Okay, so...
I have a couple quick one-liners.
Two kind of steampunky books to recommend: Steeplejack by AJ Hartley, who is an author that I know, and really good book. And then Rail Sea by China Myville, and I'm probably mispronouncing his last name, but both of those are really good. And they're both kind of steampunky, not hardcore steampunky. Rail Sea is really, really interesting. It's very interesting written. He writes in a very specific manner.
Said that like Tommy Wiseau, you know that. It's very interesting written.
I can't stop. And then I revisited a book that I probably wasn't in the best mindset to read when it came out, which was The Art of Asking by Amanda Palmer. And I'm probably going to write up a full review of that because I think she brings up some very, very good points in her book about how we treat, artists in this country and how we're afraid to just ask for things, because she goes, you know, she's married to Neil Gaiman, who is this very wealthy, very celebrated author, but she was she could not ask him for money to fund her album. So she didn't want to ask him for money to fund her album, even though they were married and he was offering, and she's like, no. So no, I probably wasn't in the best mindset when I first started, when I first read that book, but I revisited it as an audiobook. And I do recommend that as an audiobook because she reads it and you get a really nice playlist of Dresden Doll and Amanda Palmer music throughout the whole audiobook, which is awesome.
Ooh.
Sounds good.
Very cool. Yeah.
I reread a book called Asking for Trouble, which is the most fluffy little book. Like, they made that movie however many years ago, and it had Dermot Mulroney and the girl from Will and Grace, Deborah Messing. It was called The Wedding Date, which was like an awful, awful movie.
Yes.
But I reread that book that it was based on, which the book is much, much better and much different than the movie.
Right.
So it was just kind of a fluffy, like, I swear it took me 3 hours to read the thing. And I haven't read it in years, but I just restarted A Connecticut Yankee in King Arthur's Court.
Oh, yeah.
By Mark Twain. So I'm looking forward to sort of delving into that again.
Oh, I knew there was one more. It's like, wait a minute. There was one more. Artemis by Andy Weir, who wrote The Martian. This is his follow-up to The Martian.
Oh, okay.
Actually quite good. Pretty easy read. Not quite as good as The Martian, but takes place on the moon.
Did you read
anything? No. Did you read anything?
I did. So, yeah, so I guess it was when I was watching The Runaways. It was like a Sunday night. I then flipped over to HBO and I was watching some stuff. And then I was like looking at movies. I was like, I just need something that's like an hour and a half, something like that. And there was Shop Girl, which is Clara Danes and Jason Schwartzman. But I was like, I never watched the movie, but it's Steve Martin's in it as well, and he's narrating. I'm a huge Steve Martin fan, and I was like, how did I never see this? And then I'm like, you know what? I've read this novella, and so I come in here, and I pull up my but I like did not remember. You know, it's been so long, so I reread that, and it's like 120 pages, so it's an easy read. And it was just really neat. So you had the different perspectives, and I'm like, you know what? I love soundtracks. I used to always collect soundtracks. I wonder if I have the soundtrack. And I'm looking at my phone and I don't have it. And I'm like, dang it. So I go on Amazon. The thing's over like $100. The CD. Just the CD. Not an album. A CD. It's like one of those things out of print. And it's nuts. And it's like, they're not going to put it back into production. But it's like, and people, like, there's all these forums. All the comments are talking about, like, how rare this thing is. And how everybody wants it. And if one becomes available to this this bidding frenzy to get this thing. And I'm like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. But I thought it was a really cool movie, and it's a movie that they really don't make anymore. You know, it's just kind of a love story, but it's with a narrator who's Steve Martin, which is just perfect. But it's just a really sweet, like, love story, and that has some nice comedic elements. Jason Schwartzman is just fantastic in there. I think he had just done Rushmore like a couple years before that, so he was definitely in kind of his prime as far as comedic acting. But it was good, yeah. So I think that's one thing about getting older. You can reread things and you're like, oh, yeah, it's almost new. You're like, I don't remember all of this, but okay. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. I went, I sorted a bunch of books, going through books that I've had on the shelf. I used to run a book club, and so books would be sent to me and stuff like that. And I was trying to go through and keep the books that meant something to me and get rid of the others. And there is a series by Anne B. Ross called the Miss Julia series. And so I flipped through those, but I wouldn't say that I read it, but I kind of read through some scenes again. And it's interesting. It's written by a woman here in the South, Anne B. Ross. She's a local to North Carolina. And I first read the series when I was living out in Colorado. And so it kind of made me feel at home. But basically, it's about a very prim and proper Southern woman who's married to an accountant. And then he passes away. And she's like, you know, she's on all these boards and all these committees and everything like that. And then this woman shows up on her doorstep with a kid and says, "This is his son. Take care of him. I gotta go." And dumps this kid on him. And so now she's dealing with the fact that here she's like this pillar in this community. And now everybody knows that her husband cheated on her and has an illegitimate son. And it's not her son. And she's having to take care of him. And she doesn't know where the mother is. And she's trying to find it. And her husband never let her have any money or have any things. And she always like... she always did things in a certain way, in a certain order, because this is the way he, as an accountant, this is the way he liked it. And so all of a sudden she realizes, well, I can spend my money however I want, unless this woman wants to claim him. And so she has to explain to people how this little kid is hanging out with her, and she doesn't know whether she likes him or not. And so it's a fun series. So not sci-fi at all. I just liked Miss Julia. You could tell she was just that kind of like very prim and proper pearls, clutching your pearls kind of person who suddenly like, I'm going to ride a Harley. And so she rides a Harley, you know. And so it's a good series. The Harley is a later episode, by the way. But I was glad that I had it, and it gave me good memories. And I ordered off of Amazon As You Wish, which is written by Carrie Ulls. From The Princess Bride. So that is the book that I'm working on. So my quest for 52 books read this year is up to 2. But we will continue to work on that. So
I'm trying not to count the audiobooks that I listen to.
I feel like that's cheating.
That's cheating. So I'm trying not to count those because I can sit at work and just listen to books for 6 hours.
See, I like train for a living, so I don't get to listen to stuff because I'm talking all the time. Yeah. You know, it's really helpful when you're training to actually turn on your screen so people can see what you're demoing.
Yeah.
This morning I walked into work and I had to record this training, and I did a great job, got it done in 6 minutes, which is a good timeline for little quick videos to teach people. And I realized that I had created an audiobook instead. That's how I'm going to connect that all together, that I went off topic. But nice. So I had to record it again. And of course, the second time it was like 8.5 minutes, and it wasn't as crisp and sharp as the first time, because that's the way it goes.
So now you got a whole bunch of titles to read. Go and read them.
Yes.
Read. And if you have a book that you'd like us to read, if you're the author, please let us know. We are open to ebooks or hardcover books and paperback. We're happy to read those. We're always willing to support a good cause. But if you want us to read your book, let us know. Or if you're a reader and you'd like to recommend a book to us, let us know. And you can send all of that to info@guardiansofthegeekery.com. Or you can hit us up on Facebook and let us know. Don't hit us up on Twitter. We don't actually read that.
I know. We don't twit.
We do twit, but we don't
tweet.
We don't respond. We're twits. All right. So next up, we're going to be is going to be movie of the week next time. Ooh, and yeah. That's going to be Black Panther.
Dun, dun, dun.
So come back and check it out. Let us know what you think about the format. We'd love to hear from you. And with that, I say
adieu.
Adieu. Hit the button, Matt.
Thank you for listening to Guardians of the Geekery. For more information, go to guardiansofthegeekery.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/guardiansofthegeekery and on Twitter at CLTGOG. Music used by Guardians of the Geekery, Lock and Load, and A Day in the Sun by Jens Kilstofta. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 International.